Hello and welcome to the Gallery of Readers podcast. I'm Larkin, and today we get to hear from Judy Lewis, who is a visual artist and worked in community health as a nurse and many other roles for 45 years, and now is enjoying writing about all the life experiences that she had and didn't write down along the way. Gallery of Readers is a nonprofit small press that organizes a reading series every year and has published 21 books by local authors. For those books, free poems, event information, and more, visit us at galleryofreaders.org. Thank you so much for being here today, Judy.
Thank you for having me.
Yay! So could you tell us what's happening in your writing life right now?
Well, I write mostly poems, and my most recent poem was inspired by Maria Callas, who I adore. And the big challenge that I found in the poem was that it's, I think, really impossible to adequately describe sound in words. And so I realized after I started that I was writing mostly about her presence and her gestures and who she was as an actress and her looks and her life, because I just didn't know how to write about her voice. And I think I've come up with a way, which is really begging the question, is just saying that you can't do it. Or at least I can't. So that's the latest in my writing life.
Wow. So when you're approaching a puzzle like that in your process, what do you try first?
Well, I would say in everything I've ever done, I'm pretty intuitive. But especially in the arts or any kind of creative endeavor, I try to just be in the moment. Usually I'm inspired by an experience or a phrase that comes into my mind or something that isn't thought out or structured in advance. And so I just work with whatever comes into my mind at the moment and then take it from there.
Wow.
Kind of step by step. It's moment to moment. That's the way I think about it. And it opens me up to the subconscious, to my emotions, to things that I can observe in the world. And what I really enjoy is the process itself. And that's why I do it, to experience the process of doing it.
It sounds like you really connect with yourself as well and with your own consciousness. And
I think so. And I remember when I first joined the writing group, they were very clear to say that writing is not therapy. But I think that all of art really is therapeutic. And so I see it. I think that's one of the dimensions. But I feel that I don't understand what's going on in my mind or in my heart until I dip into it and try to see what's there. And so I'm always learning about myself and about the world in a different way by doing this.
Would you say that's why you write?
Yeah, I think so. Although it's very wonderful to be able to share. And especially something like poetry, because it's such a condensed form, and it gets at states of mind and understanding that I feel nothing else can quite address. And that it's when you get to those places and other people can share those with you, then it feels, there's something about it that feels very profound and satisfying, probably the way music does.
Do you also feel that in your other creative pursuits? I know that you like to paint.
Yes, I've been a painter. I've been a photographer. I do a lot of collage, painted collage with using my own work, collaging my own work, and using many, many layers and doing things over a long period of time. And it's the same kind of process of discovery.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I've never really had the desire. I like to share it individually, occasionally with people, but I've never really had the desire to take it any farther than that.
I mean, you spoke to something so beautifully about how these practices can be self-revelatory and really intimate with our own lives. And I can understand just that being enough.
I think it is, and I wish and hope that everybody has something in their life that can be an expression of their creative spirit. And it doesn't have to be art, and it doesn't have to be writing. I've experienced it in many different realms.
I'm also so grateful for you sharing your work with us today and letting it be out in the community in this way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to start with three poems, and the first is called Gray Tabby in Winter. At night, I curl in a half moon around you, the weight of your curved back pressed to my belly, my cold fingers buried in the soft, loose weave of fur. You whimper like a dreaming child, your paw outstretched. I close my eyes. Release as we plunge into the dark. And this one is called Afterlife. That day, a friend walked by and saw me sobbing in my car for what was yet to come. There are some things worse than death, she said. Later, the waiting over, Fanny faded in my arms, cradled in deep stillness, her breathing faint, the edges of her mouth curved up. I stroked and stroked her soft white belly fur. I held the five soft pads of her limp paw and tried to memorize her stripes and ragged ears as they had always been. Sometimes, the shadow of a cat waits by my bedroom door, keeping watch in silence. Then she's gone. And this is the most recent poem I wrote. And the first few lines are from a dream, as is the title. And it's called, I Dreamed I Took My Daughter to the Parthenon. I dreamed I took my daughter to the Parthenon. There was a bomb. We watched as everyone was blown apart. I would have rather dreamed of art. Somewhere deep inside a sacred cave with painted bulls of black and red and dipped in tar and blood, the tiny handprints of the dead. I squeezed in through a passageway. And now, on hands and knees, I try to inch back out to reach that distant speck of sky. If I'm awakened by the dawn, I'll shake off dreams and forswear rhymes, grateful just to be alive in what may be the best of times. I'm going to read short prose pieces. They're really vignettes of my time as a school nurse in Phoenix, Arizona. And the era is around 2010. Our low-income school was in receivership. It was a very difficult time, a very trying time. And I want to give you a flavor of what it's like to be a school nurse. And I want to dedicate these readings to anybody who works with children, anyone who's a nurse, anyone who's an educator, anyone who's a therapist or a social worker. Hopefully that'll cover almost everybody in the room. And this is called Your Papers, Please. She was crying when she walked into my office after breakfast, but wouldn't tell me why. She just handed me her torn pink paper hall pass. Her name was Elena, from Mrs. Hernandez's fifth grade class. Elena didn't have a fever and shook her head no when I asked if anything hurt. I gave her a cup of water and had her lie down on one of the cots in the quiet room so she could rest and compose herself. She picked a yellow plush blanket from the pile. I turned out the light and set my timer for 10 minutes. 10 minutes in a darkened room was usually all it took to calm a child. When I looked in on them, they would often be fast asleep. The timer went off and I went to check on her. Elena had turned towards the wall, still crying, her thin shoulders shaking under the blanket. I sat down on the cot and touched her hand. Elena, did something happen in class to upset you? She shook her head no. Is someone being mean to you? No. She couldn't or wouldn't tell me what was wrong. She was not ready to go back to class. I hadn't met her before. Unless they had an accident or a fever, I never met most of the 850 students in our school. But in every school, about a fourth of the students are what the nurses call frequent flyers, children who we might see every day. Some have disabilities, some have chronic conditions like asthma or diabetes, but most have unmet emotional needs that propel them out of class and into the nurse's office for comfort. Younger children tend to somaticize, that is, to experience emotional states like anxiety as physical symptoms. Headaches or stomach aches can be an expression of how they feel inside. Often, they just need respite, reassurance, a short break from the daily demands of school. School can be so hard in so many ways. Eventually, I sent Elena back to class, but she returned every day that week. Whatever was bothering her was getting worse. Now she was showing signs of extreme anxiety, trembling, pacing, begging to go home. I learned from her teacher that Elena was a good student who enjoyed school, had friends and a caring family. Her mother confirmed that Elena had always loved school, but now she cried and begged every morning to stay home, making up all sorts of excuses. It had gotten so bad that she had to be dragged out of the house each morning. No one knew what to do or what was causing such distressing behavior. This sounded like classic school phobia, a specific manifestation of anxiety and a recognized anxiety disorder. Every year we had at least one case in our school district with dramatic and even aggressive scenes outside the school or in the lobby, as a screaming, hysterical child would physically resist entering while a frustrated parent would try to drag or carry them in. This was never the solution and only made it worse. The source of this behavior usually falls into one of two categories: the fear of something bad happening at school, like bullying or harassment, or the fear of something bad happening at home, like domestic violence or the illness of a parent. Children sometimes think they can protect a parent who is being abused or fear that a loved one may die in their absence. In Elena's case, it took weeks and persistence to discover what was really going on. She was scared to leave home because of what might happen if she left, but her fear had to do with the tortured politics of immigration. In 2010, the Arizona legislature passed SB 1070, the so-called Show Me Your Papers law. It was the first to allow a state to enforce federal immigration law. And enforce it they did, aggressively, indiscriminately. Many of the families in our school were undocumented immigrants. And even if they weren't, they had friends and extended family and neighbors who were. Every day, people were racially profiled and stopped for minor traffic violations or snatched up at bus stops. If they couldn't produce the required documentation on the spot, they would be sent to private prisons or deported. That's what happened to Elena's uncle. And she was terrified that the same thing would happen to her mother, that she would come home from school and find her mother gone. And Elena wasn't the only one. There were many children in our school who were beginning to express similar anxieties. Rumor and the media amplified the fear, and people started to self-deport. Families moved to other states or returned to Mexico, abruptly pulling their children out of school or leaving them with friends. Enrollment declined, causing schools to lose precious funding and staff to lose their jobs. Kids lost their friends. Families were torn apart, communities frayed. School nurses reported an increase in stress-related health effects. Teachers noted social and academic problems. The law was never fully implemented due to a court injunction, and over the years, courts struck down many of its provisions, but the damage was done. So I'm going to end with some poems. And this one is called The Stillness. And I think it's pretty self-explanatory, if you wait till the end. Today, I found the stillness in between the lines. I found the stillness within the curve of self, while up above, my mother's hands were wringing out the clouds, her cool cloth of rain, her touch on my face. That's when grief found me. And I have two love poems, and there's just a trigger warning for sentiment. Close your ears. And this one is called Valentine. I love the weeping cherry tree that cries for me in winter, its branches draped in fog and icy strands of tears. In each clear drop, a perfect world. Touch them and they disappear like scattered pearls, long ago kisses, too old to remember. I walk alone on trampled ground. Birds call from the water, a pair of ducks in flight, mergansers side by side, above the river, feet tucked back. In unison, they fly around the bend and out of sight. Like them, we're bound to die, to float downstream on pale foam. Like them, we love to lose ourselves in sky. Beneath us, rivers freeze. Solids become liquids, then change back again, transformed by winter's alchemy. I chase a dried hydrangea bloom blown down the path, translucent, still intact, so light it's lifted by the wind. Elusive ghost of love, gone so long cold, you were too fast for me to follow, too delicate to hold. And this one is even more so. And it's called First Love. I've built a world without you since we ended ours that day. Lifetimes pass, we love again, lost loves fade away. Long forgotten, undisturbed, your seed lay soaking in my heart and grew into a lonely plant accustomed to the dark. Its flower has no season, but when it blooms, a fragrance heavenly and sweet as when our love was new, leaves me begging for another scented memory of you. And this is the last one. And it's about a ritual that I had with my father when I was very young, and I think it had something to do with why I became a nurse, or maybe not. And it's called My Father's Feet. When I was very young, you would lie down after work, and I'd rub your tired feet. They'd been imprisoned all day in your wingtips, hidden away like a shameful secret. I unlaced the shoes and slipped them off so carefully. Your feet were pale and veined, pointed like a ballerina's. Each big toe turned sharply in, the rest piled one atop the other, overlapping so I couldn't see them all. The son of immigrants, your feet were bound in childhood by neglect and poverty in shoes that were too small. What did it matter? You were the Rebbe's youngest boy, the one born in America, destined for greatness. I caressed your feet so gently from the ankles to the toes, and when I held them in my small warm hands with all the tenderness I had, you closed your eyes, you smiled and showed your crooked teeth, and then I knew my hands would surely heal the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Judy. To explore our books, free poems, event information, recordings of our readings, and more, visit galleryofreaders.org. And if you can, while you're there, share a little abundance because we are a nonprofit and exist through this community. We would love so much to see you at a reading or hear about a book you're enjoying right now or learn of writers we should meet and interview and hear more from. Thank you so much for listening, for being a part of our community, and we'll be back soon with another local author. Until then.